That was the last time I seen Dwayne in living form. It was about an hour later he took his life. I'm sort of thanking Dwayne for my existence as well, because I saw the real straight-up effect that had on so many people. It was two options for me, you know. Do something, get out of it, or I'll end up in the same place.
You're listening to the Almost 30 Podcast, a lifestyle podcast hosted by Krista Williams and Lindsay Simsek.
Tune in for a new episode every Tuesday to hear our honest conversations about topics like wellness, entrepreneurship, spirituality, and self-development with guests who are really smart, really inspirational,
and really fucking funny. It's real, it's raw, and it's unfiltered.
Inspired by our transition from our 20s to our 30s, we realized it's so much more than that. Our mission is to provide you with the tools, guidance, and motivation to help you navigate any transitions in your life and propel your personal growth.
Thanks so much for tuning into the Almost 30 Podcast.
Here we go. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Welcome to Almost 30.
It is Lindsay Simsek and Krista Williams, and we're coming to you from Los Angeles, as always.
I'm in Lindsay's apartment. It smells like salami.
Does it?
Yeah. Have you eaten meat?
Really? No.
It's like a good salami. It's like good.
Oh, I haven't eaten meat today.
Like Chloe would like it.
Wait, LOL. Salami?
Chloe loves charcuterie
Maybe
boards.
Is it my trash? That's really weird. I mean, I have that candle going for a while now.
Maybe it's a salami.
It's not helping?
No, it smells good. I just was like,
are you saying that I've had like penis in here or something? Is that like,
okay. No, okay. I just think that there was, I think you're eating meat a lot and you're hiding it from me.
Oh yeah, you're right. How's everyone doing? We're
so glad you're here, guys.
Literally
for coming.
So glad.
This is an important episode. So
really important.
Yeah. So we're excited to, bring the messages that we're going to talk about in this podcast to light and talk about something that's really relevant and important.
Yeah, unfortunately, really relevant. In the news lately, about a week and a half ago, the news broke that Kate Spade, as well as Anthony Bourdain, committed suicide. And, you know, everyone was shocked, but, you know, so many people are silently in so much pain and thinking that ending their life is the only way to stop that pain. And I just, yeah, it's, I don't know what that feels like. So, you know, I can't speak to it. And I don't even want to say that, like, I can't imagine, because that seems really like something anyone would say, but.
Yeah, I struggle to even speak on it. And I think we talk about it. So in this podcast episode, we have a guest on, Sam Webb, that started.
He started livein.org. Livein is an organization started after one of his best friends committed suicide, and he was with him the night that it happened. And he tells the story on the podcast, so we'll save it for the podcast. But he has really championed this space so that people feel comfortable talking about, you know, any mental health issues, any emotions that seem so overwhelming they cannot cope with it on their own. So their whole hashtag, slogan, mission is "It Ain't Weak to Speak," and just making it cool to talk about mental health. And, you know, it's just so interesting that, you know, we're on tour now for the podcast, which has been such a gift and so much fun. But there are moments like when we're up there and we're in front of all of these women and they're sharing so vulnerably and openly in front of complete strangers that, like, you can't help but feel like this collective healing, you know? So it's just, it just reminds me too that, like, speaking and being open, no matter how dark it is, no matter how sad or maybe weird I feel, it's always best to share, you know, because we're all just so human. And I think the more that we remind ourselves of that, the less alone we'll feel. So we're really excited to bring Sam's energy to you. He's a light. He's doing so much good in the world. And, you know, we just met him when we interviewed him, but, like, just so proud of him mm-hmm. for what he's done and how he turned that tragedy into a mission in his friend's name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And on the point of, you know, the tour and kind of connecting with women and the authenticity and vulnerability, I would say, I guess, related to suicide and suicide prevention, that your presence and your listening and caring ear and encouragement of finding help could change someone's life. So, you know, just taking things seriously when people say them, you know, if they are coming from a place where they do want to take their life, taking that seriously and encouraging and holding them and encouraging them to get help could change someone's life. So yeah, that's what I'll say on that.
And if you or anyone you know are having thoughts of suicide, there is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K, or you can go to speakingofsuicide.com/resources for a list of additional resources, and also livein, livin.org, and Sam will explain all about it. Thank you guys for listening. As always, this community means so much to us. Join our secret Facebook group. It's a really supportive space mm-hmm. To share and be open and vulnerable and to seek support and love and encouragement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're waiting for you in the Facebook group. So can't wait to talk to you more and enjoy this episode. We will see you in the outro.
Love you.
Love you.
This episode is brought to you by
Thrive Market.
What are you loving Thrive Market right now?
I mean, I'm always getting my Primal.
Yeah.
From Thrive. I'm getting my Justin's almond butter.
Yeah. They have Bob's Red Mill. I really like the, I get the Mary's crackers.
Oh,
I love the Mary's crackers. I like Thrive Market because, and this is being real, I don't like to go to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go to wherever and buy one thing of coconut oil when I can get super high quality, cheaper stuff just on Thrive. And the way yeah. they package it is so thoughtful, just comes to your door. So like anything organic or healthy that you have, like they basically have, and it's really affordable.
Yeah. And it's up to 50% off every single item, every time you order. And then free shipping for orders of $49 or more. And they have so many freaking products. Sometimes I go on these websites, right?
Yeah.
Like kind of like a Thrive. And I'm like, you don't have a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah. If I hit one dead end, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm out.
It's weird.
What's
I'm
the
out.
Point?
I'm like, oh, you don't have this. I'm out.
I just want to go one place
yep.
and get everything.
Yeah.
Okay. So for our listeners, you can go to thrivemarket.com/almost30. That'll bring you to our landing page where you can see all of our favorites, how convenient. And you'll also get 25% off your first order. So that's like an extra 25 on top of what you're already saving on Thrive Market, which
it's
is
like
amazing.
Free almost.
Which is a lot. And then click get started today and you can just sign up with your account and everything like that. It's super easy and we just love them so much. We trust them. They give back. They feed families across the nation who cannot afford mm-hmm. To feed their families. And yep. we just love them so much. So thrivemarket.com/almost30 gets you an extra 25% off your order.
This episode is also brought to you by Altera Pure. Okay, so I'm doing a complete overhaul in my bedroom. So I started with a new mattress and I am thankfully on to my sheet situation. Altera Pure is something, a brand I can trust. What's so nice, because I always have questions when I'm shopping for brands. I'm thinking, where is it sourced? Is it something that might irritate my skin? As we become more conscious, my questions deepen. So Altera Pure is super transparent about their whole process from seed to sanctuary. You can call them and ask them any question at any time. It's really great. Their lines of communication are always open, which I love about this brand. Not only are they organic, but they are also pesticide-free, non-GMO cotton, These sheets, duvets, pillowcases, etc., are fair trade, and you can rest assured that where these sheets are made and created, the people and environment are treated right, which is really important to Krista and I. And they have their sheets sent to an outside third party to have it verified. So triple checked so that we know. And just on a very surface level, their sewing is top notch. The quality is amazing. I'd like to, in general, just wash my sheets a couple times before I put them on my bed. It softens them up a little bit. But these sheets are tip-top quality at a really fair price. So for our listeners, you can use our code ALMOST30, ALMOST30, for 20% off your first purchase. So you can go to AlteraPure, AlteraPure.com. Check it out. I just got my crisp white sheets. So excited to get in there tonight. Try it out.
I can't believe it.
It's so cheap.
I wonder why everyone loves a drink over here. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, it's so true.
Do you think people like to drink here more than Australia?
No, probably not.
Yeah. What makes, why are Australians so like YOLO? You guys literally are so like just do everything. You guys are so adventurous.
Yeah.
What is that? Where do you guys get that mentality?
I just, it's, I wouldn't have the answer. I just think it's just part of a cultural shift for us.
Yeah.
You guys, one thing I've noticed, and I used to date a girl here in the US for 5 years. I lived over here.
Oh, wow.
And one thing I noticed when I first come over and lived here is Americans don't like traveling. They don't like really traveling. Most Americans don't like, they call traveling going to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've been to 40, almost Florida. 40 states here in America, and people like, I haven't been to none of them. And don't get me wrong, I don't go over in Australia, but like we always make holidays and vacation like top priority for us.
Mm.
Europe, Bali, America. Whereas when I've come over here, people, yeah, the mentality is very different.
Yeah, like you guys travel. I don't think you guys care about stuff as much.
Nah.
Like, you know, I think here people maybe don't travel to save money to like get a bigger house or a better car. Like you guys have a priority of experiences over things. Mm. I don't know where that comes from.
Yeah, I don't have the answer for that. I wish I did, but it's definitely just ingrained, I think, into the culture.
Yeah.
And I think it's good, but each to their own. I mean, maybe too much holidaying and not caring isn't ideal either. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But everyone's different. I make, you know, holiday time,
okay,
personal time,
yeah,
like top priority on my calendar, just because you need to look after yourself before you look after anyone else.
Yeah.
And especially in the field of mental health, like we're dealing with people's lives daily. And if you're not giving the right advice, it's probably because you're not doing well yourself. So if you're 100% and you feel on top of your game, you can give the best advice. You can look after other people a lot easier.
Mm.
And holidays is part of my self-care strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Hence Playa del Carmen in Mexico.
Yeah, literally.
Well, it was a long time ago, probably over a year ago. A friend of mine had heard you speak here in LA. And she like ran to me and was like, you have to have Sam on the podcast. Oh. My friend Sarah, who's a writer at SoulCycle. So shout out, Sarah. And so, you know, it's a very important conversation that we really haven't gone deeply into on the podcast. So we're so happy you're here. Sam Webb's here from Livin.
Very grateful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, we're
very
so
much for having me.
You. So, you know, it's not an easy conversation to have, but I think that's kind of the point. You know, these like not easy conversations are ones that, and this is partly what our podcast is based on, is just having these open, honest conversations so that people don't feel alone. You know, they feel like they can reach out and be vulnerable and connect to hopefully experience more light and see the potential in themselves and their life ahead. So I know that it was tragedy that kind of brought you to starting Livin. So could you share that story with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Livin started in 2013 after the death of a good friend in the name of Dwayne Lally. I was with Dwayne the night that he took his life, and I never used to wake up going, I'm going to run a mental health organization. I've had mental illness has been something that's run pretty rife through my family, and and even still then, and having my own dealings and like, you know, challenges with mental health challenges, so to speak, I still didn't have the answers for everything. I thought I did. I thought I should have, you know, if you've got something, you feel like you should have the answers to everything, but I didn't. And I don't think anyone ever has the answers to everything. And that's the most daunting thing about why and how this started. I mean, Dwayne opened up to me the night of September 15 of 2013, and I'll never forget it. I was definitely drinking. He was as well. And that night was probably one of the, you know, the funnest nights I've had in a long time. It was great. Like everyone was happy. Like any house party, you know, it was good. It was great fun. Great people were there. Good conversations. And Dwayne opened up to me that night, and I didn't see it coming. I was caught off guard. Like he said, "Webb, I need to tell you something." He called me into his room, and I remember us having a proper D&M for about 40 minutes. And he said, "I've tried to take my life twice before," and I was so caught off guard. I didn't even know what to say.
Mm.
Like I thought I listened as best as I could. I thought I said everything that I, you know, could have said, and tried to relate my own mental health challenges. It was kind of a really special time, to be honest, because I was in a very dark place too. So it's like Dwayne, Sam talking about mental illness and suicide under the influence, and we were both very open with each other. And it was sort of like we were both in a really dark place, and he never really knew about how I was feeling. And I knew that he was suffering with some form of mental illness, but never, never would have crossed my mind how serious that was. Because Dwayne, like most males do, they hide their pain so well, and the stigma kept him quiet. And he promised me, like, "I promise you, Webb, if I'm ever in a bad place again, if I'm ever suicidal, I'll definitely reach out to you." And that was the last time I seen Dwayne in living form. It was about an hour later he took his life. So the ripple effect that had on thousands of lives, sort of, you can't even put a number on it. And I'm sort of thanking Dwayne for my existence as well, because I saw the real straight up effect that had on so many people. And it was two options for me, you know, do something about it or I'll end up in the same place. So yeah, we made a change, and Casey, which is Dwayne's best mate, who's the other half in the charity with myself, we started living, and with the approval of Dwayne's parents, we got it off the ground, and just one thing led to the next, and we had a few shirts made up for Dwayne's wake with his face on it, and Living wasn't established then, but those shirts were like a great way for people to represent, you know, someone's life, and we're thinking, we've got to turn this into some sort of movement or just some sort of passion project. And a friend of mine did up a logo for us, and we got Livin' started with the arrow, and it just took off, and it just spoke to so many people over something that was so simple. I think like in terms of the shirt, that was so simple, but starting something off something so tragic was, yeah, it's, look, I'd take back everything that we've done to this day to have Dwayne back, to have people in my family that I've lost to suicide back, but you can't do that. So we're just doing our best now to make a change, and I wouldn't want it any other way. I mean, this is my life now, and as well as acting. So I've got two passions of mine that I'm pursuing relentlessly, and I won't give up until they're both successful. So,
wow. I'm curious, like, kind of following what happened, like what was the conversation amongst like people your age who were kind of, like you said at the time, you were partying and also dealing with some form of maybe depression. Like what was the conversation after that, and how did it turn into trying to shed a light on how we talk about mental illness, making it cool, you know, making, you know, the 8 week to speak hashtag that's gone viral. Like how did that come about?
Yeah, absolutely. Good question. One of our friends actually came up with that mantra, and it's sort of like just stuck. It ain't weak to speak. And it was just sort of like, one thing we identified after Dwayne's passing was this happens every single day. And as someone, Sam Webb, as someone that's had my own mental health challenges, I didn't know all about that. I just thought that this was part of my Sam Webb's life, and this is just what I've been dealt with, and I've just got to be able to manage it. I didn't realise that 8 people a day in Australia take their own life, and out of every, you know, 3 or 4 people that suffer with a diagnosable mental illness, you know, 2 or 3 people aren't seeking professional help. And I was thinking, why is that? And a lot of the time is because the stigma keeps people quiet, and most people can't really identify with themselves what they're feeling and what they're struggling, so they blame it on other things. And we had to do something to make this area relatable. There's too many there's great organizations in America, all over the world, Australia, that are doing awesome work around, you know, smashing, you know, getting the services there, so getting help and having funding here to put someone through a camp or a retreat or whatever else. But there was no one really out there speaking the language of a young adolescence, you know, 15 sort of 24-year-olds, for example, where it was relatable. It was very dark. Like we've still got all these great organizations, but they're not really that positive. Mm. Living's all about living. Like live your life, like have a great time. If you've got vulnerabilities, own that shit. Don't shy away from your issues and problems, because the more you do that, the bigger the problem's going to be. So we're all about owning your problems, speaking about how you truly feel, because if you don't ask for help, you'll never know. And I was very wrong. I didn't ask for help for years because I didn't think anyone would understand or anyone could help me. And I was very wrong. Like the first time I asked for help, people actually do get it. And there is help out there. There is help from all different angles. But when you're suffering with a mental illness, your brain thinks otherwise. It tries to convince you things that aren't true. And you sometimes live in you know, silence, and you live by yourself, taking on that struggle by yourself, for yourself. And that's not what it's about. And everything that we do is around promoting the mantra, it ain't weak to speak, getting people to speak up, seek help, have fun, be cool doing it, and you know, don't regret anything. Like, just have fun.
Mm. Who was the first person you asked for help from?
Would have been my mum. Yeah, it would have been my mum, but it was probably more at the time. It was identified from my girlfriend at the time, and I didn't know. I thought it was a problem of mine, and I was just like, I've had this for years, even before I had the missus, and I was like, all right. So I reached out for help, and it wasn't easy. Like it wasn't just getting help and I'm back on track and I'm back to my best by any means. It takes a long time. You learn to manage it. And, you know, you might go to one doctor, for example, and like, what do I say to these people? I don't even know. So the hardest thing with a mental illness for someone that's struggling is, if I, as a person that's struggling with it, can't explain how I'm feeling, how on earth is someone else going to get it? So it's almost humiliating. So if someone goes to Sam Webb, so talk to me. So how are you actually feeling? What do you feel? I don't know what I feel.
Yeah.
That's humiliating, because people expect you to have these answers. Mental illness and mental health is one area which sometimes there's never going to be an answer. And that's something that I've had to accept.
Mm. And it's hard because you don't have the language sometimes to express exactly where you are and how you're feeling. And therefore you think it's invalid because you can't, you know, express it in that way.
Correct.
What do you think the gap is between like the clinical treatment and what you're doing? Like, you know, obviously you've said that you need both, or you could use both, whether it's medication, but what is that gap? Like what is the clinical side missing in the treatment?
It's a really good question. I don't know that it's missing too much. I think it's just a lack of understanding for people that are either suffering or helping someone that's suffering. The gap is probably the framework where it all sits together, like the journey from identifying help, getting help, and the road to recovery.
Right.
Too many people are under the misunderstanding that you get diagnosed with a mental illness and it's as easy as taking a few pills or going for a run and being, you know, having a really simple health plan in place and you're back perfect. But it's about really setting those expectations. So, for example, if I tell someone, you know, and we motivate them and we inspire them via a Live and Well session that we do at schools to seek help and speak up, they might go and get that help from a psychologist, and that might have taken them 5 years, right, to speak up and seek help. They might get to that psychologist and not have a fit. They might not get along with that person, so therefore they're going to be like, well, the guys at Live and or the people that run these organizations are saying that this is where you got to go if you're struggling, but if they can't help me, like, no one can help me. This is, my life's done. Like, it gives them no hope at all. So you've got to really set those expectations and tell people the honest truth that it might not work the first time, the fifth time, the tenth time. It takes a lot of time. You know, it's like getting in a relationship with a girl or a dude. It's, you're not going to be in a relationship or have a friendship with someone if you don't have a connection. It's as simple as that. Mm-hmm. You're going to say thanks for your time, but no thank you, and go somewhere else. And it's the same thing with therapy, same thing with mental illness. And what works for me and you girls might not work for no one else. So everyone's vastly different in this space, and I think it's The biggest gap is just setting those expectations. The work's there. The great organizations are there. It's now about linking them all together so people have a clear pathway to get help, because a lot of people don't know where to get help. They just think that they have to deal with it themselves.
Mm. When you said it was your girlfriend that first noticed?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
What would she say? Like, did she say you just start acting kind of off?
Yeah, or, just like know? Sort of just not being myself. And it's like little things would sort of like irritate me. Mm. And it was like, for me, I think I was taking it out on people and things. And for me, I used to try and keep really busy. It was a way to just channel my thinking. So I used to always have to be doing something. I couldn't just relax in thought, because I'd be ruminating on negative emotions and stuff like that. That's why I've become so positive, because I have no other choice. I've trained my brain for the best part of 7 years to be like this, and I wouldn't want it any other way. It's power,
yeah.
You know. But yeah, it would have been the change in behavior would have been probably the major warning sign, and probably turning to, you know, substance abuse.
Mm.
Yeah. Not bad. Like, yeah. I've never been an alcoholic or a drug addict or anything, but probably
finding
doing it more.
Escape.
Yeah, and I was at university at the time. So there was other moments in my life that sort of probably triggered it as well. I mean, I had to save a girl's life at 20 years of age. She gave her CPR. She had to have a cardiac arrest, and I think that brought on a lot of PTSD for me, a lot of like real bad anxieties, especially from a heart perspective. I'm a fit dude, but you know, there was times in my life where, you know, I remember like breathing so fast, my heart was just going quick for no reason. I used to think, fuck, I'm about to have a heart attack. Mm. I feel like I'm dying. If that chick at 20 can have one at school, I can have one at 25, you know what I mean? Mm. So yeah. Yeah.
Did you, like, I want to talk about too with this like masculinity's role and like how that plays a part, because I could imagine that, you know, your girlfriend's like, hey, you're acting kind of off, or however she said it. And, you know, if you're kind of in that place, you're kind of like, I don't know, I could see being a little defensive and not really understanding. And, you know, your friend that took his life too, as a guy, it's kind of hard to explain how you feel. I don't think you guys have as big of a emotional vocabulary as we do. You know, we're spending our entire lives with our girlfriends kind of explaining how we feel during most of our lives. So, you know, maybe he was able to open up to you once he was drunk or whatever. But can you talk about that, like being a male and having these emotions or the stigma that is around it with mental health?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, males tend to try and have the answers for everything. And as you said, you nailed it straight away. Females are very good at sharing their emotions, being honest, being open. And the thing with males is we try and have the answers ourselves, because we should have the answers. That's how males are brought up. We're meant to, you know, solve problems. We're meant to be the breadwinners in the family. We're meant to be the hunters and gatherers. It goes back decades, hundreds of years. You know, like, males are the saviors. Like, they shouldn't be out of cry. They shouldn't be weak. They shouldn't be, you know, vulnerable. Like, they're just got to tough it up. And that's how, and this goes back to for years. And I think it all changes from a young age. I think the only way we can change that is changing the way parents, you know, interact with their young kids, because this all gets instilled in you by your subconscious, you know, 4 or 5 years of age. And if you're told at the young age, why are you crying? Why don't you, you know, your sister doesn't cry. Like, you're going to grow up and you'll be like, well, you know, that's all you know. You don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, absolutely. The masculinity stuff is just a shame, and trying to have all the answers for everything. And no, I can do this myself. No, I can do this myself. So yeah, and it can get channeled out in frustration, anger. I'm not an angry person by any means, but some people, like a lot of people get diagnosed, especially males, they get diagnosed with like anger management problems and substance abuse, but their real underlying challenge is the mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But because they don't know how to explain the feelings, and they don't know how to explain their emotions as good as females and women do, it's very challenging. So we're talking people living in constant denial or silence for their whole lives. And it's hard. It's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work. And I think there's so many different facets to this. Like, mental illness is super complex.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just sit here and say, one, this is how it's felt and that's where it's come from.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing they ask you when you go to therapy, and I'm not sure if you guys have been, I mean, they always ask your childhood. That's the first thing they ask is about, you know, what happened around child, anything traumatic. And because things happen, and that's where it all starts from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so formative at like,
yeah,
you were saying what, like five, six, seven, eight, even around that time, I feel like seven is like super, super formative. I'm thinking of like my brother or other like male friends when we were younger, but can you speak to that time in your life? Like, I'm sure you have amazing parents, but were there some things that you can link back to kind of what you were dealing with in your early 20s? Like why that would make sense?
For me, I mean, nothing in particular. Like, I don't think, well, I mean, again, in the subconscious, they probably would have a greater effect on me than I probably even realized to this day. My family split up when I was seven. So that would have had a massive impact on my life and my brothers and sisters. And there's no doubt in that.
How old were you?
Seven. Mm. And I don't know that that ever, like, again, I can't sit here and say that's got a reason, because, again, there might be myriad of reasons.
Totally.
But, yeah, I look back, my old man, my dad, he's very traditional. He's like, harden up, you'd be right. Didn't really understand, never really had a conversation around mental health. Whereas my mom, she's completely different. It's one of those things. I mean, there's so many different possibilities that could cater or could be the reasons what could contribute to having a possible mental health challenge or any challenges in your life. And everyone's very different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But for me, I mean, it was probably just a number of things. Like it's could be, you know, chemistry. A lot of people in my family have had mental illness and they still do to this day. And I think the beauty of it is once you accept it, I think accepting it and managing it and living with it, it's amazing. Like I never have a problem until these days. Like I'm great.
Mm-hmm.
But like when I say I'm great, yeah, there's days where I'm super anxious. But that's, I wouldn't want it any other way because that creates creativity for me. And creativity is
what you need,
what I need and what I enjoy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And everyone's got anxiety to some level. It's what's helpful and what's unhelpful and what's counterproductive and productive.
Mm-hmm. And having an outlet, you know, is helpful for a lot of people that have anxiety, having an outlet for that anxiousness because, you know, it's like misdirected energy sometimes. It's interesting too, like, so with substance abuse and then, you know, drinking and partying and drugs and stuff and the relation that it has with mental health, it's kind of like one starts and then you don't know where it ends. Do you know what I mean? Like I remember when I did drugs, like a good amount, I would, you know, you have really like low lows. And so I would never knew. I'm like, you know, I've had history of mental health and anxiety in my life since I was like probably a cut child. But I always was like, what is it, the drugs? You know what I mean? Sometimes I'm like, is it because I'm like Sunday scaries? Is it because you're really hungover and you really need water and you really need sleep and you really need to nourish your body and you've been treating your body like shit so you feel like shit? You know, sometimes I just always like, what do you think about the relationship between substances and like your mental health or like being depressed?
Yeah, absolutely. Correlation without a doubt. Mental drinking, as you girls know, it's a depressant.
Yeah.
And it's so fun in the moment. Give me a drink and I'm all about having a good time. Don't get me wrong. But the next day, like I'm always paying the price for it. So I've got to keep busy because if I sit there, I'm anxious because that's just part of the alcohol coming off. I say what it's called hangxiety. I don't get, my hangovers aren't feeling sick in the stomach. Like it's hangxiety.
Me too.
Yeah. And it's very common. And that's just part of what I have to deal with when after I have certain drinks. It might not be all the time and it might be certain things that have triggered it.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely drugs and alcohol have a negative part of me impact on your mental health, even for the strongest minded person. And I don't think no one has the answers, as I said earlier, to everything.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows everything about anything. Mm-hmm. And that is the honest truth. But I think with substances and everything else, it just it clouds your judgment as well. Like a lot of people do things in the moment when they're under the influence that they wouldn't normally do. It gives you the Dutch courage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it gives you the confidence.
I always like see couples fighting. I'm like, you guys wouldn't be fighting right now. Like you know, there's always like girls crying on the corner on their phone. I'm like, you wouldn't be crying right now if you were wasted.
The amount of times that I would like run away from a party. and be like, you called me what?
And just like ran. And it would, but I would be depressed for like 3 days. Mm-hmm. Whereas we could have had a really productive.
And then you look back and you're like, are you coming?
But it's like, we could have had a productive conversation if we had the tools. Absolutely. And if we weren't drinking.
Both of you had the tools.
And you just got to, and just not take it out on, like, I always say to myself again, I've trained my brain for years, but don't make big, like, life changing decisions a day after you've been partying. Mm-hmm. Because your mind's so volatile. Yeah, your mind's so volatile. And your emotions are just not right. They're not firing correctly. Yeah. They just never are.
That's what I always think too.
Sit in the sauna.
Whenever I speak to friends or like I have people that I know that are feeling really low and feeling depressed, I always go with like, what's the first thing? Do you have enough water? Have you slept well? Have you eaten well? Have you, you know, taken time for yourself, like kind of going through first the self-care checklist of like what makes you happy, what makes you feel grounded, what makes you feel whole. And then beyond that, you know, once you've checked that off and you're still feeling depressed or anxious or, you know, having mental health issues, it's kind of like going from there and then figuring out next best steps. But like half the time it's like, I remember, you know, Justin, my boyfriend, he was feeling a little low like a few weeks ago. And boys, I don't know if he knew like really what to like attribute it to. And it was really like he wasn't, I was like, oh, like when was the last time you played basketball? Like he's really good at basketball. He plays basketball all the time. And he's like, yeah, it's been a few weeks. I'm like, when was the last time you saw your friends? You know, it was like been a week or so. It's like kind of having him think through like, what have you done to like nurture and fuel yourself that you love to do? And it was like, and he was like, oh yeah, you're right. Like I haven't done those things. So oftentimes I try and like go there first before, you know, kind of like thinking as next steps. But, you know, you need to figure out what works best for you. But that's what I find it works best.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. You got to have that self, you got to have like a management plan in place. Have you guys played the Sims game before?
Yeah.
Back when you're younger.
Back in the day.
There's a social bar, right? Mm-hmm. And when that social bar gets to nothing.
Make them have sex.
Yeah. do all sorts of good shit. But when that social bar gets to nothing, you don't exist because we need, as human beings, we need to stay socially connected. Yeah. And the last thing that you want to do when you're in a bad place is see people. But when you get up and go, I'm going to go do it, even though you hate it and you don't want to do it, you thank yourself after you go, I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. You touch your hand.
Yeah, you're like,
you're trying to chew
our
me.
Listeners know, we need like mitts.
Our listeners know that when people bang the table, they're passionate. So it's a good sign.
Yeah, I know. Firing hands, he's under the table.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely you got to stay connected. You got to stay socially connected, but you got to have those plans in place. Sleep deprivation, lack of sleep is probably the
most
it's not spoken about enough because sleep is the most important thing that the human body needs to recover because it's when it fires. There's certain science behind this, but it's like when your endorphin levels and all that are replenished and everything else when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
And if you don't sleep, it's not good.
Yeah.
Sleep is so important.
You just mess yourself up.
We interrupt this episode to bring you a word from our sponsor,
Kopari Beauty. I have a new fave for my shower. So I don't know if you guys have this, but on my arms, I have the red bumps like at the top of my arms. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's basically a problem where it's too much protein, I guess, is being created. So it's getting clogged in your pores and then it creates red. And you need to continuously exfoliate and then moisturize. So I didn't have an exfoliant that I loved that was natural. So I'm so thankful that Kopari has their coconut crust scrub.
Yeah.
This sounds like real commercial vibes, but it's the best.
It's so good. It doesn't taste good.
I would eat it.
It smells like it tastes good.
And
do you know what I mean?
I love the consistency.
They're trying to use as much of the coconut as possible. So they're crushing up the shell of the coconut too in the scrub. So it's really exfoliating. It's amazing. That's a great one. And I'm also really digging their Skin Essentials pack. So it has a cleansing oil. And you know that coconut, or if you don't, coconut is antibacterial. So it's a lot of people think that putting oil on your skin, coconut oil on your skin, especially your face, might make you break out. But it's actually
killing the bacteria. It's actually balancing the oil on your face. So if your skin is not getting enough oil, it'll overproduce oil. That's why you're oily. Very complicated. Did you get that? It also has a rose toner, which is smells delicious. There's no alcohol in it, which is nice. There's a face cream that I love. It locks in moisture like a freaking pro. And the lip love. The lip love is actually...
It's crazy.
It's crazy. It's so good.
I opened it. I was like, I don't really like lip glosses. Mm-hmm. I don't really do lip stuff unless I'm doing lipstick. And I'm like, I use it every day now.
Yeah, it's delicious.
It's so just, good. Again, the consistency is right. It's thick, but it's not sticky.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of pink. Like, I've been blown away by their stuff.
So you can use our code ALMOST30, ALMOST30, for 20% off your first order.
Wow.
At, I know, for real, KopariBeauty.com. KopariBeauty.com. What is your self-care routine?
My self-care care routine, as far as life, I probably don't have a...
What kind of products are you using?
Botox. I'm smashing the...
Oh yeah, we got some wellness shots air, on the table.
I need this right now. I'm so run
good.
Down.
Yeah, take it.
So
take
right
it.
Now, I'm a bit run down. So for everyone listening, yes, I'm run down. But self-care is number one care.
Yeah.
It is absolutely number one care. And I never used to think that. I thought it was selfish looking after yourself. Mm. Until... It would have been a couple of years ago when we were getting really deep into living and I finally committed to it as a full-time job. And I wasn't burnt out. I wouldn't say I was burnt out, but I was getting maybe a bit of compassion fatigue, maybe a little bit of I was a bit tired. Mm. And it wasn't that I wasn't interested. It was just
compassion fatigue. That's interesting. Yeah. Like you're hearing people all day and you're kind of just like
getting sensitized to it. And I was just like I've got to really take care of myself now. Like, because if I don't take care of myself, I'm not going to last in this job. And the job needs me. This needs me. This is like, it needs me. There's no if, buts, or maybes. So I was like, all right, self care is number one care. Exercise for me is I've always exercised my whole life. I've been in sport, exercise, doing the things I love. So a lot of my life was doing things for other people. Now it's all about doing it for me. I do acting because I want to do it. I want to be an actor and that's what I'm passionate about. If I'm not currently working, I'll be in classes. I'll meet people, I'll talk, I'll work on my craft and that's what excites me and that's what creates my energy and it gets my creativity going and everything else. You know, walking, I listen to a lot of music. I read. So at night, I don't have my mobile phone, never sleeps next to my bed. It's not even in my room. It has this trip just because I'm on holidays, but at home my phone gets charged outside of my room. I don't have a TV in my room simply because I get sidetracked and I read. I read every night before I go to bed, even if it's 2 or 3 pages because I'm a slow reader. I'm like a snail.
I love that.
But like when I read, like I fall asleep.
Like the dog jumps over.
And then sleep time. Yeah. And then like it takes me about 6 months to read a book. No, I'm joking. Yeah. It does. And I'm like, but I'm happy with that because that's me. Some people can read quick. Good for you. I'm me.
Yeah.
You're absorbing it.
Yeah, reading's good, but also spending time with family like, and friends, the people that are meaningful to you and help you be a better person. You become like the 5 people you spend most of your time with. And that's a fact. And you've got to socialize with positive people, people that reinforce, you know, the positive things about life and that sort of stuff. But, you know, I just wipe negative people anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah, what has it been like to do this type of work for you personally in your relationships with other people? Has it enhanced your relationships with them? Has it, you know, have they kind of been enlightened and educated and come out and tried to speak to you more about this stuff? And on the other end, have people maybe shied away and been uncomfortable and kind of distanced themselves?
Yeah, this is one thing I feel like, I'll never know everything 100%. I'm a forever a life student and that's the way I like to look at life. I feel like my emotional intelligence has increased out of nowhere. I'm very able to better understand how people feel and how they're coping. And I feel like I'm better equipped with the tools to be able to help someone and help myself. And I think the most important thing is, you know, with, you know, relationships and friends is like a lot of people have opened up to me since I've started living. And they're like, say things that are extremely, you know, humbling, and I'm grateful that they've been able to open up to me. And these are some of my closest friends, which is great, you know. A lot more trust there, which is, I think, probably the most important thing when it comes to telling someone how you feel. If you don't trust someone, you're not going to tell them.
Yeah.
Trust. Does it get hard sometimes hearing that all the time?
Everyone asks me the same thing. Like, surely it feels hard. And for me, I've got good boundaries. Uh-huh. I have I'm lucky. Like, I have a good life. I'm very grateful. And life for me, a good life doesn't look about having things. It's about having people in my life. I've got a great team and that helps me get to where I am today. I would not be where I am if I didn't have the people in my corner supporting me, helping me, because I'm not perfect. I always have bad days, but my bad days isn't like a bad day. Like I change my perspectives on everything. Like when I'm having a bad day, yeah, my struggle is my struggle and I understand that, but there's other people that are doing it a hell of a lot harder than I am. Mm-hmm. So I look at different perspectives on things. It's really hard dealing with these stories every day, but I think the most important thing is boundaries. And I've committed to this. This is what I've committed to. So I have to, this is just what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Mm.
So and this all comes back to self-care. If you don't have self-care in place, you're not going to be best equipped to deal with these stories all the time. Mm-hmm. It's going to take its toll on you. It's going to create negativity. But for me, while there is not always an answer, there's always, you know, good conversation points around this and there's a lot to learn. So for someone that's struggling, they open up to me, it's great just giving them my feedback, and I'm not a doctor, but just giving them a few pointers that maybe have worked for me and 1,000 of the other people that I've spoken with over the time can help people in more ways than one. Mm-hmm. The smallest problem to me right now might be insurmountable to one of you girls. You know, and that's how we need to understand life. Yeah, I'm very grateful. I'm grateful for that because not everyone's cut out for this work. And I'll be straight down the line saying that. Mm-hmm. This is not for everyone. What we do, not everyone could do. And I'm not saying that from a higher status because I'm not. I just think that this is not something that everyone can be doing. It's tough. It is very tough emotionally, physically, everything else. But I think if you've just got the right measures and team in place and the passion behind everything that I do is just relentless. Mm. That's just driving me every day. So I just, I won't give up.
Why?
Yeah, the why. And that's the most important thing in life. Why do you do? If you're in film, TV, if it's something completely different, if you work at a grocery store, it doesn't matter as long as you're happy with your why. Mm-hmm. And it can take someone their whole life to find their why. Mm-hmm. I'm grateful that I found my why, but I'm equally a bit upset, obviously, that I found my why through something that is so bad, like tragic, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was jumping from job to job before this.
Wow.
Yeah, I was in finance and I worked in media and then I worked in finance and I was in sales and then I was in media and then I hated what I did. Hated it.
Wow.
Good at it, but hated it. Yeah. Not driving me, wasn't fulfilling.
Right.
And then this happened and then my whole life just changed.
Were you really depressed when you were doing those jobs?
Yeah, I wasn't happy at all. Like crushing it in terms of hitting sales figures, really good at my job when I worked here in America. I worked in a private equity firm and I just wasn't enjoying it. Mm-hmm. It was a big part of it, added to my feeling of loneliness and all those other feelings. But yeah.
Are you spiritual?
Not really. Nah, not a lot. I haven't really investigated that area really at all. It's one area I think I'm very sheltered in. I think I need to learn a lot more.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you believe, about death? Like, what do you believe? Do you believe that your friend is around ever, or
like, do you feel him?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes I do, and I believe there's something out there. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm. But as far as looking into that deeply, I haven't really explored it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're kind of living it.
Yeah, I know.
When you think about it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you're kind of living it right now. So what would you say to someone if they came to you and they were telling you, you know, that they feel really dark, they feel really depressed? What kind of like advice would you give to them?
For me, I mean, straight off the bat, again, everyone's very different. Listening is probably the most important thing. Mm-hmm. It's one thing I learned exponentially after Dwayne's passing. I feel I listened that night, but I don't think I listened as much as I should have. Dwayne was asking for help and I didn't give him the help that he needed. That's how I look at it. And listening non-judgmentally is probably the most important thing. someone come to me right now and ask for help and they said they're in a dark place, I'd simply just do as much listening as I could, but also identifying the imminent risk if they're in a crisis, obviously, is so important. One thing I did not ask Dwayne Lally on the night of September 15th of 2013, I share this every time I speak, is I did not ask him if he was suicidal that night. And although he said that he was in the past and he was feeling great now, I didn't ask him that direct question. And you need to ask that direct question if someone you feel is at risk. Mm. Because if you don't ask, you're not giving them permission to ask and tell you. Had I have asked Dwayne that night, he'd have been like, no one's ever asked me that.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe I do have a plan. No, I've got a plan and I'm suicidal. Mm. Gives them permission to ask. And that's one thing I would definitely change now moving forward.
Mm.
And I ask all the time and it creates so much better conversations. Mm. People are like, no, like I haven't thought about taking my life today. I'm not suicidal right now, but I can see it going down a bit of a dark route. I'd identify, obviously I'm not a doctor, I'd let them know that. I'm not a professional, I'm very clear on that. But I'd also say, look, have you told anyone else how you're feeling? Does your immediate family, is any of your best friends know? A lot of the time, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because that most people like to keep things at an arm's length distance. Because they feel like if I tell someone who's too close to me, it's like it's intrusive and they'll judge me. It's just this first instinct that will come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know that. That's just what their mind tells them. But when you actually do it, you're really wrong. Mm. I'd ask, have they obviously seen anyone else, spoken to anyone else, if they're a student, if they spoke to a counselor at school. I'd offer other supports. So I'd be like, have you thought about reaching out to a psychologist? Have you thought about maybe having a conversation with someone that you trust at school or a friend, if this is your friend?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a certain place in the schoolyard or in the workplace that you feel comfortable to be able to share with me this? Because a lot of the time people have a safe haven. It's like a sanctuary where they feel more comfortable to open up to you. So identify that. Would it make you feel more comfortable if I was to come with you and make that doctor appointment together? Would it make you feel more comfortable if I sat in the waiting room? Because sure as hell, most times it will. It's super fucking daunting sitting in a psychologist's office and just not sure what you're doing.
Sure.
Mm. If I offer to go with you and I'm your good friend, would it make you feel more comfortable? Probably. Checking in on someone I think is so important. Mm-hmm. The amount of times I just drop a message to somebody who I know is pretty vulnerable and they're probably always vulnerable and just say, how are you? I hope you're well. Just a message like that can change someone's life. And the amount of times I've done that in situations where people have been on the cusp of taking their own life and they've got my message and they've just said, oh my God, like, did you know that something was up? Or, you know, it's just, it blows my mind.
Mm.
The smallest thing to you as a gesture could save someone's life. Don't feel like you need the answer. So for anyone listening here, don't feel like you need to search for all the answers. If you're trying to give someone help and you don't have the answers, that's okay. Be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I don't have the answers right now, but maybe we can find the answers together. You know, honesty is everything, and don't try and solve the problem. Everyone tries to solve the problem. You're not going to solve the problem. That's the thing. You won't solve the problem. You can help someone with the problem, but you won't solve it for them.
Mm.
You've just got to be able to be honest with them up front.
What are you doing in schools? Like, what does that program look like?
Program looks like it's around a 45 minute, so like one period of class. We aim in at grade 7s through to grade 12s. We've spoken over 100 schools last year. We'll probably hope.
Years. Those years are hard.
Yeah,
those
years are really hard.
Yeah.
And then we'll speak at probably 200 upwards schools this year. We've spoken to over 40,000 young people since inception. I think there's probably a lot more, but that's just what we've documented. And that program is really around stigma reduction. So shining a positive, cool light on mental health. Like, let's have a conversation about it. Let's make it cool. Get cool speakers up there that are relatable, that people can have cut through and they can hear and speak to. But really it's around giving people the basic tools, understandings around to seek help, how to identify if I'm in a bad place, warning signs, symptoms, what I wouldn't say to my friend. I wouldn't tell you to harden up, get the fuck over it. That's the worst thing you can say to someone that might be struggling. Where to get professional help from and how to actually ask for help. A lot of people, and we promote the message, it ain't weak to speak, right? But it's asking for help is an art. You can't just say, I need help. It's because if you don't know how to articulate it, what are you asking for? So having those conversations, skills. So it's skills-based training around having those conversations. Mm. But it's more on a very non-clinical perspective, even though the material is clinically backed and it's evidence-based, which is awesome. We say it from a cooler sort of
you
angle.
You wear like V-necks.
Yeah.
And your cool shoes.
Yeah.
We're cool.
We're the Adidas. And I think it's just being honest and just having fun and just, yeah, when I speak, I'm very open and honest with people. Like I just tell them how it is. Like no one in this class or no one in this workplace will ever know everything about anything. So if you think you do, see you later. Mm-hmm. Like you just be honest. Mm. And it puts people back in their place and they're like, well, shit, he's right. Like he's vulnerable. You be vulnerable, you're giving other people opportunity to be vulnerable. And that's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're really closed off in life, even relationships, whatever it is, you're not going to get to that core and you need to get people's core.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's been the response?
Yeah, super positive.
Mm.
Yeah. Game-changing, life-saving.
What do kids say?
I've had many, many different stories. Like, I remember one thing you said, you completely opened up my mind. I was suicidal before coming to this session today and, you know, I was able to go home and speak to my mum. You know, speak to my family for the first time in forever. Like, I've been dealing with this for years and you guys gave me the confidence to speak up and seek help. And that's just one story. But while there's a lot of positive stories, we still lose people. A lot of people still take their life. You know, I've had people where I live and stuff that have taken their life. So it's like this is a very hard thing. And one thing I was really wrong about when I first started living was, you know, we're going to fix and change the world. We're going to save everyone's life. And I don't like the word can't, but saving everyone's life isn't realistic. It's not realistic. And I was super, super, yeah, when I accepted that, it's made what I do for work a lot more easier. Because you're not, perfection is an illusion. Perfection doesn't exist. Imperfection is perfection. And we'll save a lot of lives. We will to this day, but I don't think anyone can save everyone's life because there's some things that are going to be out of our control. You know, 2 a.m. in the morning if someone's in a bad place and they can't reach out for help and we're not there or someone's not there for them. I can't just bring a magic wand and send an angel to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What would you say to people who have experienced loss, who have lost someone to suicide?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is to know that, you know, it's not your fault. You only knew the information, and this is a famous saying Louise Hayes said, you only knew the information that you knew in the moment of time given the information that you had, and there is nothing that you could have done better or worse or whatever that is in that moment. And after the fact, you'll beat yourself up and it's probably my fault. I do it too, but it's not your fault. You haven't done anything wrong. You've done the best that you could do and you need to reach out for help too, because if you've lost someone to suicide, you become 6 times more likely to take your own life. And the amount of people that have taken their own life after losing Dwayne blows my mind as well. And it's just, you've got to reach out for help and give yourself that permission, because it's all deaths are very not good. Like they're absolutely critical. But a death by suicide, no one ever told me that. You know, every time my phone rang or I had a missed call from someone, maybe a couple of missed calls, that I'd be on edge thinking, fuck, has someone done it again? Or what's going on? You know, like they never told me that. Okay. And every time that happens, you're constantly reminded of that night for me personally. And it's like, shit, is it going to happen again? And so you got to look after yourself. You got to reach out for help and just know that everyone says it. You're not alone. But you fucking feel alone in the moment. You feel alone. And everyone says you're not alone and you're not alone. Other people are in this. In the moment, you're going to feel fucking real alone, really alone. But honestly, just know that that's part of a mental health challenge. Mm. And in 3 months from now, or whether it's 6 months from now, you might be in a whole different place physically and mentally. And you'll look back and you'll be like, I am so glad that I'm living. Like, I'm so glad that I'm alive. I'm so glad that I didn't make that choice. because the amount of people that I've spoke to that have attempted suicide, that have regretted it, you know, and luckily they've lived, it just speaks volumes. And that's something that I sort of have to live with every day for Dwayne. I mean, yes, he took his own life, but did he really mean it? And if there was someone there that would have gave him help when he was doing it, maybe he was trying to save himself and he couldn't. And it's sad. Okay. A lot of people aren't trying to end their life. They're just trying to end the pain. And a good story to just probably sum this all up for anyone that's been suicidal, and this story really sums it up well for me, is think of 9/11, for example. It's a very, very dark story in American history and for the world. Think of the people that were on the 90th, 100th, 105th floor, were covered in a room of smoke and flames and so hot and unbearable, they couldn't see in that room. But all they knew how to escape that pain was to break a window and jump, not knowing that free fall would have killed them. That's very similar to what mental illness is. You're trying to get rid of that pain right then and there, but you don't know that what you're doing is going to kill you. You just want to stop it. And it's an impulsive choice that people are making every single day. And it can be stopped.
Yeah, what is the, sometimes I think about, you know, if I'm talking to someone who is feeling low, do you speak to the perspective and the long-term, kind of zooming out from the situation, or do you speak to just like taking it day by day? You know, I don't know what is more effective. You know, I don't know if it's both, but I don't know what's more overwhelming.
Yeah. I think you want to make it less overwhelming. Hope equals survival, right? Someone that doesn't have any hope doesn't see life.
Yeah.
So if you can create more hope for someone, which is in a lot of sense more options, it's going to give someone more chance of wanting to live, right? Because they're going to see more hope. Oh, I could possibly do that, or oh, I could possibly go there, or oh, that could be right. There's more opportunities, so to speak. You don't want to overwhelm someone too much though, and look at all these projects in 3 months, 6 months' time. Day by day, I think looking at the present is probably most important.
Yeah.
And it's a famous saying that Alatunde Ulatat, whatever his name was, did it. It was like yesterday's history, tomorrow's a mystery, and today's a gift. That's why we call it the present. And it's like, it's really important just to ascertain the right now, because tomorrow's not guaranteed for anyone. And in the moment, yeah, you've got to create options for someone that might be struggling, and you've got to give them hope. But just being there for them, and I think, is really important. You don't even have to say something. You don't have to speak. Just being there. Like, man, people are like, yeah, I got that off my shoulder. Like, I feel good now. Like, you don't even worry about saying anything. Like, it's good. I felt something, you know. It's a complex space though. Like, what works for one doesn't work for everyone. Yeah. A long-term plan might work for a lot of people. But for that one, it might be the worst thing you can tell them.
Sure.
Yeah,
too overwhelming.
The stakes are so high.
So high.
It's interesting too, like when you're talking about how to help, you know, like there's something too, I think it's something that we can all do for like a personal work and personal growth, is just like presence when you listen. Like, I can only imagine if I was like during low times, if someone was able to like presently, non-judgmentally listen to me. I mean, that's like everything.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to like speak your truth and be heard in a non-judgmental way is like the greatest gift.
And to have, do you work with parents of kids that age? Because I think parents need the tools to be able to listen in a present way.
They just live at a low level of depression all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The parents.
Ours too.
Yeah. The parents definitely, I think they're really important because they're the ones that are spending most of the time with the kids, if it's not the family, are the schools, right?
Yeah.
It's a tough one though, because a lot of parents don't want to talk about this subject because they don't know how to handle it, and they're scared of it. You know, they're scared of the unknown.
We do
work with parents.
Yeah.
I think people are also scared of being really happy and risking the uncomfortable effort to be really happy. Like, they don't believe that there is a possibility to be happy all the time. and so that they don't want to go for it to like figure it out. Like you said, it took you 7 years to like train your brain to be positive. It's taken me years too. I can't remember, maybe 2013 was when I really, 2012 was when I really started to like shift my mentality and change my brain structure, like my actual brain. You change gray matter in your brain to like be positive. So it's like, it just takes so long, but it's possible.
I think when there's, you know, feeling so deep in it, it's hard to even look up.
Well, it's hard if I was like, when I was deep in
it, the hole.
And being like, hey, it's going to take you 6 years to change your brain, you know, like, or 2 years or 3 years or whatever. It's like, you're like, fuck that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for us who have, you know, and it will be forever practicing, it'll be forever training.
It is.
I look at the gym, right? Going to the gym.
Yeah.
For example, even if you're cycling at SoulCycle. Shout out to SoulCycle.
Next time you have to ride when you're in
town. Yeah, I know. I was a bit lazy.
Yeah, what the hell?
Good. I would have smoked everyone in there anyway.
Dudes always think that.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm going to crush Soul. This is a race, right? This is a competition, right?
It's like you go to the gym to do push-ups, sit-ups, bench press, whatever it is, SoulCycle. But you go there because for a number of different reasons and you keep going to the gym. Even if you are at your fittest peak physically, you still go to the gym. The same way we and I still promote, you go and go to the mind gym, the brain gym. The brain gym is like therapy, things that are good for your brain. I go, now that I'm like, you know, I'm great, right? I'll always keep going. I'll train my brain every day because your brain is the most important thing. And your body, and there's a saying, your body won't go where your mind doesn't go, right? So you've just got to, there's just not enough importance has been put on brain health for hundreds of years. But we're seeing it more and more, you know, front of the line right now, especially in schools and, you know, health curriculums and stuff like that, which is great, but we've still got a long way to go. But definitely look at the gym, as in like lifting weights for your arms and your body, physical, the same way as, you know, going to speak to someone about your brain. Even if you're doing well right now and you're listening to this and you're like, oh, this doesn't relate to me, it does relate to you because you've got to keep training your brain because there's going to be times in your life where you're going to get something that you're probably not going to be able to cope with properly. And you're going to need to have that muscle there. And it's the same thing as rewiring your brain. Yeah. The gray matter in your brain actually changes.
That's such a good analogy, I think, especially for men.
Because
I think they think therapy is a something you go to for a finite amount of time. You go 10 sessions. Yep, I'm good. You know, you kind of take that gratification of I'm feeling better. But to think about it like going to the gym or a sports practice or, you know, something like that makes more sense.
Absolutely. Imagine how much
the individuality piece of that. So with the gym and with fitness, not one workout works for everyone. Not one SoulCycle, you know, just doing SoulCycle doesn't maybe not work for everyone, just whatever. You need to really figure out what workout, what diet is best for you. And that's the same with your mental health. You need to figure out what is best for you. What does that look like? Does it look like getting medication? Does it look like seeing someone? You know, what exactly does the remedy that best fits you and your mental state look like?
Absolutely. And it's like when you're sharp between the ears and your brain is on point, your confidence is there, you're thinking right, you're so resilient and all that stuff. Geez, you're noisy. And then, all that stuff, like how much better is your life?
So good.
Like
so
the gym and all that's good. And you got to look like self-worth does not and self-confidence and all that does not happen in the mirror. It all happens from within. And if you're not happy from within, you're not going to ever be happy from without. So training your brain to think right, and look at the positives and have different perspectives and, you know, being able to bounce back from tough situations and have an open mind, that's most important because if you're acing that, chances are your relationships with friends, loves or whoever it is, jobs, it's just going to just be so much better. But people don't really understand that. And I think the more it's just everyone's born ignorant, right? We're not born with mental health understanding. So therefore, we're going to now have to go back and start training people. Simple, but it's a time thing.
How can our listeners and beyond get involved with Livin'?
The listeners and beyond can get really involved with Livin' if they head to livin.org.
Great.
livin.org. We'd love to help you help us jump on board, support the cause, you know, get some merch. Hopefully we're going to have something started over here in the US sooner rather than later.
I was going to ask that.
I'm getting there.
Let us help you.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to move out here hopefully in the next, you know, 6-12 months and get living going over here and then pursue my other passions. That's the goal, but it's going to take one day as it comes at the moment.
Yeah. It'll happen.
Love that.
Yeah, it will happen. It will happen.
Yeah,
it will.
Absolutely.
And how, and you guys, are, so you have the website, you're on Instagram, Livin.
Yeah.
Or
Livin.org.
On Instagram. Okay, cool. What would you like to leave with our listeners, just kind of as like a part of your purpose, your mission?
I think if you're ever in doubt, just reach out. I think just reach out and don't make an impulsive decision based on your temporary emotions because it can be life-changing. And you can't take back suicide. It's not something you can just say, oh, we shouldn't do that. You're not going to be here to make that different choice, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing that I've realized is the temporariness of emotions and kind of like my spiritual and my mental journey is realizing like that's what you really realize. You're like, you feel, there's just like an impermanence to how you feel. You know, if I have a bad day, I'm like, oh, well, it's just, I can realize, I can bring myself to understanding that this is just today. I do my checklist. Okay, am I had enough water? Have I had enough silent time? Have I hugged someone today? You know, something like that. But really, there's such an impermanence to how you feel and like letting, you know, your emotions ride out and trying to like ride those feelings to something like a brighter day or something that's better is like so important. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever can get you to understand that like nothing is ever the same, change is the only constant. Even if you feel super low and you feel like you want to take your life or you feel like there's never going to be a better day, there can be, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Possible. It is. It's very possible. And it's not possible if you're not here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very possible. And they say they always say stay alive till you're 25, right? Mm-hmm. Because your prefrontal cortex,
yes,
part of your brain doesn't fully develop till you're 25.
Figure it out. Yeah.
So just stay strong. And yeah, if you're in doubt, reach out because in 5-10 years from now, you can live in silence and you can keep trying to be the hero and take on the challenges yourself. But it's going to be a lot easier if you ask for help now. Be proactive rather than reactive.
Mm-hmm.
That's what living's all about.
I think as the last thing I was also thinking about too, I think in the United States for like the people that I've known in my life that I've had friends or family or related to have like lost someone to suicide, I think that people really shy away from speaking about it. Like it's almost like it happens and it's shameful, the shame with it. And they don't want to say it, you know, if they died some other way, maybe they wouldn't feel as like shameful to like admit it or talk about it. So I think that there's something to that, you know, everyone's pain journey is different. Everyone's like grieving is different. And I know, you know, for the people that I've known that have taken their lives, like the grieving process and conversation process for me hasn't been super open. So I think there is something to being more open about someone's journey so that you can help identify those signs that they had and maybe, you know, help someone else.
Definitely.
And like when in doubt, reach out also applies to people who might feel like they should reach out to someone that maybe they haven't heard from in a while or they've, and I think as humans, like we have that like inkling or that thought for a reason, you know, we're bodies of energy, you know? So I don't think it's ever a coincidence that we're thinking of them or we feel that maybe we should reach out. You should. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No matter if something's going on or not.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And yeah. And things do get better. Like in the moment, it should feel like they're not going to get better. That's it. But they do. It's just simple as that. They do get better.
You're like a prisoner though.
Yeah.
You know, you're just such a prisoner. You're like literally like it's all just happening right here and like nothing else is happening but like the prison that you're in, which is so hard.
Yeah. And just lastly, I just want to add that we can make it sound easy because it's not. It's easier said than done. And for those of you who are going through some type of mental health challenge or know someone that's dealing with a mental illness, it's bloody hard.
Yeah, it's
so own that shit. Yeah, own that because it's tough. And you have to be strong. You have to have courage. You have to be brave and all that sort of good stuff. So give yourself permission to know that what you're dealing with is super challenging and it's not something that you can just click a finger and it's easy and you'll be sweet tomorrow because it's not, if it was that easy, everyone would be doing it. So know that your journey is your journey and, you know, it's strength in numbers always.
And it's not shameful. You know, it's not, there's no shame around feeling anxious or depressed or bipolar or, you know, any of those things. So helping to remove that shame is also really helpful. And I just want to say too, you know, this conversation, we obviously don't, I just want to make it really crystal clear, you know, for any feedback or conversation that we have in following to this, that we don't know the answers. You know, everything that we say is coming from our specific perspective of our specific lives that we've lived and the situations, the cards that we've been dealt. So, you know, I look forward to like opening up the conversation with you guys in the Facebook group and kind of learning more about your struggles and how you guys have gotten through them and kind of just continuing this conversation about suicide, suicide prevention, mental health awareness, and really just hopefully providing a space for you guys to feel like you don't have to feel ashamed and that you feel like you're not alone and that there are people in the world that do care. They may not know you right now, but that do care about you and do care about your life.
Very, very well said.
Thanks.
Very well said. Well, thank you for being here. I know that our listeners will be changed because of this and because of your work, and also to feel like, you know, they could find purpose in a similar type of work, whether it's through an organization or just interpersonally reaching out to people. So thank you for the work that you do. And you're not even 30 yet. I'm just like blown away.
Thank God you got here before.
Thank God.
Still almost.
Almost 30. Nah, thank you very much, guys, for having me. Very, very grateful to be on here. Thanks for your time. Keep up the great work. And hopefully we'll see you in LA sooner rather than later.
I know. It's coming. All right, guys. Thanks for subscribing, rating, and reviewing and for joining our secret Facebook group. You definitely want to join the group. We're going to have some amazing conversations, I know, following this episode.
Let the girls in the group, you know, be there for you. They're there for everyone in the group. You know, there's over 3,000 of you that are there for each other every single day with your problems, issues, even to talk about light things. So join the group and come share.
And come see us on tour. So we're in the middle of our tour right now. So please check out almost30podcast.com.
Tickets are left.
Yeah. Check it out. Go to the tour tab under events. And we will see you in a city near you. We love you guys.
Love you. Bye. Whew. How you guys feeling? How's it going? What's going on? Thanks for listening to that episode with us and Sam. It's livein.org. The hashtag is it ain't weak to speak, and we completely agree with that. So if you are having suicidal thoughts, speak out, talk to someone. I know it's hard, but there are people that are waiting for you, waiting to talk to you, waiting to help you.
Yeah, thank you so much to Sam for coming on the podcast. He was visiting from Australia. Hopefully we'll be out there soon and we can connect with them again. It's such a great organization. If you'd like to get involved, again, livein.org. And we love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you think someone would benefit from listening to this episode or any other episodes, share with your friends. That's the number one reason why we grow. And it means so much. Tag us, message us, email us. We read every message and get back to you. So please feel free to talk to us. All right. We love you guys. We'll see you on the road. We are on tour. Next up, we are in San Francisco.
Sold out.
Yeah, it's sold out.
Sorry.
Oops.
Guys, it's sold out.
Oh God.
And I wish it wasn't because we literally are like over capacity for the space.
I know.
I honestly, I wish we had a bigger space, but well, we don't.
Let's put it out there. Anyone last minute have a bigger
space? Anyone last minute have an amphitheater you could kind of borrow?
Next up after SF is Boston and New York in July. So stay tuned for that. That is about to sell out as well. So make sure you get your tickets. Sorry, I don't mean to be real annoying about that and really obnoxious.
I know.
I feel like about to sell out is such a ploy.
I'm saying it in a genuine way.
It's more like, oh, I wish we had like an amphitheater.
We just had to move our space in New York to be bigger. So it fits like 150, 200 people.
Damn. I don't even have that many friends, but I'm about to.
I know, literally.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening at Almost 30 Podcast on Instagram. Tag us, message us. We love you guys.
We love you. See you next week. Bye.